Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tierney ou le grand pont pour éliminer Furlong. Qu'est-ce qu'il lui a fait là? Qu'est-ce qu'il lui fait, Kieran Tierney? Kieran Tierney, c'est quoi? C'est quoi ça? Il vient souhaiter une très bonne année aux supporters d'Arsenal. Kieran Tierney, quel rush! Magnifique! Magnifique! Magnifique!
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you. Are you awake?
I am awake.
You
just
are.
About. I'm awake. You found me on my sofa. I must have slipped off at some point during the second half. Been here overnight. And here I am.
Do you ever get a feeling during a game that turns out to be, you know the way we all have these kind of feelings, like towards the end of a game, we haven't scored and you're going, oh, we could get a sucker punch here. You know, that kind of fatalistic thing that I think all of us get. And when it happens, we go, oh God, I'm so
in tune.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I know what's happening, blah, blah, blah. But I think there's just an element of fearing the worst and it actually coming to pass. And also Arsenal being quite capable of doing that to us in recent memory. So we're all think we're experts in that regard. But I had a very, very strong feeling from, actually before kickoff, that this was going to be one of those games. I'll tell you why. I turned on my Skybox, no signal. Your Skybox is receiving
a bad omen immediately.
No signal, right? None at all. Unplug the box, do the thing, turn it on again, no signal. I'm like, okay, well, this is bad. I have another box, you know, one of those, how's your father, don't say a word kind of boxes? No,
sure.
One of those?
Yeah, one of
those. Well, I'll turn that on. That'll be fine. I'll just, you know, click on. That'll be... Nothing worked. Didn't work. Whatever's happened there, it's gone. Whatever. The authorities, I don't know who. Gone.
You should have accepted what the elements, what the cosmos were telling you, Andrew. You weren't supposed to watch this game.
I think so, but I had a duty of care to the readers and the listeners and everything else to make sure that I saw this. So I eventually found a stream on my phone and streamed from my phone to the TV, creating a lovely kind of, I don't know, I guess it was about 30 seconds, a minute behind everybody watching in real time on TV. So apologies to anyone who's on the live blog for that. But that's when I had the feeling that this was going to be one of those games.
So actually, were you quite relieved in a way that it didn't transpire to be a sucker punchy kind of game?
Well, no, I wasn't fearing the sucker punch. I just sort of had this feeling that it was going to be one of those, like a nil-nil was of no surprise to me whatsoever. I felt like we weren't going to score.
And is 0-0 the worst result in football? I firmly believe
no,
it is.
No.
No?
No. I'd say on a sliding scale, sort of 10-0 would be worse. 9-0 also a bit worse. 8-0, 7-0, so on. Those are a lot worse, but I do know where you're coming from. I know where your mind is.
I think I'd still have a 0-0, but like worse than some defeats. Because at least with defeats, as a supporter, you get kind of the catharsis, you know, and you get those moments.
You get to be
really
angry.
You get to be angry, exactly. You get to pick it apart. Whereas with a 0-0, it's just kind of like, yeah, it's a very horsey result, you know?
Yeah, nay-nay.
Nay-nay.
There you go.
But, listen, I guess there was no sucker punch. We did not lose. Maybe, if we're going to look for positives, that is the positive.
I think so. I mean, this, it does feel like the kind of game we could have found a way to lose a few weeks ago.
We would have done, yeah. I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure too. So if we're looking for silver linings, if we're looking for any kind of positives this morning, it is that, you know, we kept a clean sheet. I saw the stat. Did you see the stat from Orbino, the doom stat man of all time?
Is he okay? I'm really worried about Orbino because just going through those stats, it's got to be a tough.
I think Arsenal, yeah. Arsenal, you know, it's like, you know, that scene in, what's that film? The fucking film with, how do you like them apples? What's that with fucking the guy who has the strength of 10 men?
I don't know, actually.
Matt Damon. Like Matt Damon. Goodwill Hunting.
Okay.
Goodwill Hunting.
Okay.
And you know the bit where he's like the humble janitor guy and he goes into the classroom and he sees the equation that the professor's been trying to work out. And of course, he's so super smart. He goes up and goes and does the fucking, does the equation, and he's a genius. But I think it's a bit like that for Orbino at the moment, except none of it makes any sense. All the numbers are going in his head. He's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. He's seeing the world like Neo sees the Matrix, just numbers coming at him. And it's all very, very, very ugly.
Yeah. Anyway, the stat that he put out was Bernd Leno got his first clean sheet at the Emirates in the Premier League since March 2020. So, woohoo!
Wow, that is a big stat.
Yeah.
What's that? 9 months? Wow. Mm. Congratulations. The gestation period of that clean sheet is now over. He is finally... It was conceived in March last year. It's been growing inside him, and now he's released it to the world.
Welcome to our Bonnie baby boy clean sheet.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, those, I think, that is the positive. It's a clean sheet. And also the return of Thomas Partey, I think, is a positive because he's been out for 10 games or so. So seeing him back on the pitch was good.
It was good. I mean, it balanced in my mind by the fact that Kieran Tierney, as we all know, is entering an MRI machine imminently. Which makes it sound bad. You know, before the game, Arsenal put a thing out saying muscle tightness or something like that. Then, you know, Arteta drops the acronym bomb in his press conference and suddenly we're all like, what has happened?
Fuck? Yeah. How tight is this particular muscle and which muscle is it? Is it his heart?
Yeah. Exactly. It was the brain. It was the brain all along. So a bit of counterbalance there. But I mean, I guess that's a good place to start because the starting lineup, you know, there were a couple of changes, weren't there?
Yeah, well, obviously Tierney is a big miss and Ainsley Maitland-Niles came in at left back. Pablo Marie was, I think he's got a calf problem. They said it's just a calf problem, but probably we'll get some news today that his leg has fallen off.
Yeah, what exactly? Let's put him in the MRI, see what else we can find.
Yeah.
So that was a concern. I mean, we did talk just the other day about Tierney desperately needing a rest.
Maybe, and I'll just throw this out there, the FA Cup game was the time to rest him.
The straw that broke the camel's legs. Yeah, I fear so.
Not being Captain Hindsight or anything on this, but, you know, it was one of those things we mentioned at the time in that, you know, 120 minutes in an FA Cup game. Maybe those minutes could have gone to somebody else. Maybe this injury is unrelated to the fact that he played 2 hours against Newcastle because other players who played against Newcastle also played. So, you know, it's not necessarily down to that, but it's hard not to make that connection.
Yeah, and I can't think of an outfield player who's played quite as many minutes as Tierney recently. And it's funny, you know, we said, well, did he play against Newcastle? Because he's just so integral to the way we play.
I think he is.
We probably got our answer. And then obviously Luiz came in for Marie, like you said. Other than that, Xhaka and Ceballos were back in the midfield. And then up front, it was kind of what you were expecting, right? In the absence of Martinelli, that was kind of the lineup everyone would have picked, I imagine.
Yeah, I didn't have any or nothing about that front three and Emile Smith Rowe behind them was a surprise, I don't think. So, I mean, what did you make? I thought we started quite brightly. I thought there were some positive signs in terms of how we used the ball. Ceballos pinging it around, looking to get involved. He was having some moments, wasn't he? There were a couple of little crafty bits of skill in the midfield. You're thinking, okay, this isn't bad, but, you know.
There's something about Ceballos where, like, when he is on it, he just finds an extra gear in his play. And it's, it seems to be sort of energy as well as technical. And I just wish that we knew whatever formula it is that kind of can generate that in him so that we could do it more consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when it boils down to it, there's an issue for me with Ceballos, with Xhaka and with Luis in that they all want to touch the ball a lot. You know what I mean? They all want to have a couple of touches, look up, see what's on, make the pass, etc., etc. And I think part of the issue that we had yesterday was not moving the ball quickly enough in certain areas. Luis is, you know, he's a really good passer of the football. We know that. We know he's got range to his passing and everything else. But he kind of, he's 33 now. Is he 33? He must, yeah, he's 33. So he's kind of like, I'm the senior guy. I've been here. I've seen that, done that, worn the various T-shirts. I know what this game's all about. I will play the game at my pace.
Yeah.
And I think that was really evident last night in that, you know, it was like, take the ball. Rob Holding is standing there, you know, open for a pass. And he sort of gestures at Holding, like, move out, move out, move out, move out, move out. Keeps the ball, keeps the ball. And then ends up playing it to Holding anyway, when he could have played that pass 3, 4, 5 seconds earlier. You know, I think what's inhibiting about Luis is that desire to play the game at the pace that he wants rather than at the pace the game requires. And when you're playing a team like Palace, when you're playing a team who are, you know, whose game plan is built around organization, structure, getting men behind the ball, staying in position, cutting off passing lanes, when you take so long to move the ball, all that does is give them the time to just retreat back to where they need to be. And because they are well-drilled, because they are disciplined, because Hodgson is a good coach, you know, and has plenty of experience, it makes it really easy for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And actually, if you listened to, well, you couldn't help but listen to Ray Lewington on the sidelines of Crystal Palace, you know, everything he was saying, everything that he was encouraging was about their defensive shape, was about them working back, about them tackling back. And, you know, they came here very organised. And, you know, teams have done it against Arsenal this season because they feel like it's a risk you can take and it's something you can withstand. But I think it's a good point on Luis. I don't want to overplay this, but I do wonder, you know, the fact we replaced Tierney and Marie, two left-footers with two right-footers, you know, if Arteta's so keen on having a left-sided centre-half for reasons of balance and being able to exit quickly and efficiently and with variety, I do wonder if that affected us in approach play as well.
Yeah, Maitland-Niles struggled, didn't he, at left-back? I mean, there was a moment really early on where he made a brilliant run down the inside left channel.
Yeah.
Like a superb run. The pace was amazing. He got on, you know, the timing of it was perfect. And it was there for a cross to come in. And because it was his left foot, he kind of clumped it way over the bar. It, you know, it wasn't a good delivery. And I think there you're looking at the difference between, you know, the threat of Tierney. You know, it wasn't so much that Maitland-Niles wasn't in the right positions. It's what he's able to do with the ball in those positions because he's a right-footed player.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was the first time he got to the byline. And maybe he put a cross in with his left foot. I forget, but it was wildly inaccurate. And you just thought, okay, well, that's the difference. You know, athletically, he's of course got the capability, but just technically as a right foot player, it's not going to be the same. And again, you know, with Aubameyang also wanting to go inside from that flank, I do think that was a bit of an imbalance. And it's easy to say, you know, captain hindsight, etc. But, you know, they made the change with Saka going over to left back. I do wonder if it might have been worth starting him left wing, just so you had somebody who, you know, was able to get to the byline and play on that side. But, you know, I know why they started with it the way they did.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of that is,
work.
Yeah, you play Aubameyang from the right where he's, you know,
sure,
it's not it's not his best position. I mean, the other thing you could have done, of course, was play Pepe from the start or play Willian from the start, which I don't know that too many people would have been particularly happy with, and play Aubameyang as your centre forward. That would have been another option, I guess. But he went with what he went with, and it didn't really work. I don't think we ever really clicked as an attacking force. You know, we got into some decent positions in the final third, but the final ball or the incisiveness was not there. You know, I remember Aubameyang a couple of times getting into decent positions on the left-hand side, sort of in the box, and then just not being able to find the final pass. It just didn't quite work, whereas, you know, in the last couple of games, we've had some moments where the absolute precision of the passing in around the penalty box and those one-touch movements, you know, have been so perfect, like literally perfect, that it's impossible for the opposition to deal with. When those things are off by 10%, 20%, sometimes a bit more than that, it becomes a lot easier for the opposition to deal with.
Yeah, and I think some of our attacking players became a bit detached. You know, I mean, I think Lacazette was really not in the game. He didn't have a shot, I think, in the game.
He had one into the side netting, but I think it was offside.
Right, okay, yeah. And even, to be honest, in the first half, like, Smith Rowe's been so important to the way we play, but I felt like maybe the opposition came prepared for that, and he was finding it a little bit harder to find space, and we were not finding him as easily and as early. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of one of those where, I mean, they had the better chances certainly in the first half and came closer to scoring, didn't they? I mean, Tompkins hit the bar, and Leno made what looked like a very good save actually from Benteke header. I don't know if it was quite as good as it looked, but in the moment I was like, wow.
I think it was as good as it looked.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it was a really good one, because it was one of those where he got up across and got a kind of big hand on it. It wasn't fingertips, it was the palm of his hand to sort of scoop it away. And I think that was a really, really good save from Leno. And not for the first time he's shown his importance to us in a game recently. You think about what happened at the end of the Newcastle game, the end of the 90 minutes, when he made those saves from Andy Carroll. So, yeah. If we're talking about positives, actually, the fact that Leno wasn't particularly busy and that he made a telling contribution, I think, is a real positive.
Yeah, and did so against Newcastle as well in the FA Cup. By the way, one thing I meant to say about Maitland Niles, you might not have seen this to the same extent because obviously you were streaming the game via your phone, but I was having a look at social media and he was taking absolute pelters really in the first half. It did seem like it was one of those games that really just got away from him, particularly in that first 45 minutes. I thought his passing was really sketchy, and it was one of those where it looks like he sort of wasn't really concentrating, which can sometimes be the case with him. Did you notice that? Or
yeah, I mean, there was that back pass, wasn't there? The one that he lumped a back pass at Leno.
That
mean,
was the most egregious example, yeah.
He really hit it, you know, and I have some sympathy because he's playing. It's not that he's never played left-back before, but he's not a natural left-back. Let's be real about this. He's not a natural left-back. Nevertheless, I do think he struggled. I think probably in the opening 20 minutes more than the rest of the game. I think he did quite well after that initial period. Not brilliant, but certainly better. I think there was one really good crossfield pass, and there was a moment not long before he came off where he showed some good feet and had a shot on goal. Yeah, I mean, I think more than it being a poor Maitland-Niles performance, I think it just highlighted the influence and the importance of Kieran Tierney for us.
Yeah. Simon Collins tweeted saying, you know, the biggest drop-offs in the squad in terms of quality are at goalkeeper and left-back.
Yeah.
And I think that may well be true. I think that may well be true.
Well, it is, yeah. It is. I think we got some questions on the left-back thing, so we might come back to that in part two. Can I ask you a little bit about what you thought of Granit Xhaka's performance? Because I, on reflection, think it was mental.
Because I mean, I thought he was pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. By the same token,
there were moments where, you know, he made a really, really good tackle on Zaha in the box. I know he was penalised for one, which I thought was very harsh, just outside the box in the first half. They had a free kick they put over the bar. It was one of those where I think, you know, the referee was very generous towards Palace. You know, his tackling is not necessarily something that we consider one of his strengths.
No.
Right?
No.
But whatever he was on last night, the timing was perfect pretty much in every tackle that he made. I think he won 6 out of 6 tackles.
Yeah.
But the fact is that, like, a couple of those at least were from him giving the ball away, which is not really what you associate with him, you know, because his passing generally last night was really good. I think he made almost 100 successful passes out of 112, something like that, you know, so... He was on it in terms of, you know, his influence and his desire to get on the ball and everything else, and his defensive work really stood out because it's not what he's strong at. But, you know, there were moments where he kind of put himself in trouble, and at the same time, you kind of have to say, well, you have to credit his commitment to making up for those errors. You know, when he gave it away, he chased back and he tried to win it back for us. It was a really mad kind of performance, I think, on an individual basis. 99 out of 112 passes he made.
He played a bit like a player, you know, like when a team's kind of, I don't know, 2 or 3 nil down and a guy sort of goes on a mission and they're like, I'm going to... I mean, that is Xhaka, I guess. He always wants to sort of put out fires. He always wants to put himself in the centre of things. But I do think he had a pretty good game. In some ways, I'm cautious about that just because I'm wary that it might have been a very eye-catching game because, you know, you see all those sliding tackles and there were a couple of kind of... very good passes, but also some inaccurate ones. I think, if anything, he was just trying to force it a bit. But it's an interesting one because if you asked me to individually assess Granit Xhaka and Dani Ceballos in this game, I think I would probably say I thought they both did pretty well. But then when you look at the team and you look at our performance generally and you look at how little we created, you kind of have to interrogate that and say, you know, even though they might have looked good to my eye, are they actually doing the right thing, you know? So it's hard to say in a team that sort of doesn't create anything to look at the central midfield and go, yeah, they were fine. But weirdly, that was my instinct. That is what my eyes told me.
Yeah, I think you're right. They were fine. Ceballos had 72 of 77 passes and created one chance.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at Xhaka here in terms of chance creation. No chances created.
No chances. But
and he made 26 of 30 passes in the final, in the attacking third. You know, so...
Yeah, he was our most progressive passer, according to Scott's post-match kind of data rundown. I think, to be fair, second was Rob Holding, which I think shows you know how deep Palace were and how difficult we were finding it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually thought, although Ceballos had some really... eye-catching passes early on that I thought were brilliant. I thought Xhaka was the better player on the night. But, you know, it is tricky because I also look at that and I can't admit that I thought it was a bad idea. You know, I thought it was great to get Partey on and I am hoping he's going to improve that part of the pitch dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, would you have done it the other way around? Would you have done Partey for Xhaka rather than Partey for Ceballos?
I don't know. I mean, I tweeted this last night. I'm excited about Partey, but I do slightly fear we are projecting him to be something he's not because, you know, I saw fans and stuff sort of hoping that he was going to come on and change the game. And I don't think he is. I think we might overstate his kind of creative potential slightly. Mm. Maybe that's just me, but, you know, that isn't. Certainly not what he did at Atletico Madrid. I know he thinks he's got more in his locker than that, but I don't want to kind of build him up as once we play Partey, we'll be creating chances all over.
No, yeah, I tend to agree with that, but I do feel like once we get him back into the team and hopefully established on a regular basis, he's in there week in, week out, I think what he does is he just adds an extra layer or dimension to the way we play through midfield. Not necessarily him, you know, taking it on like Patrick Vieira and sliding slide rule passes through to the forwards and things like that. That's not necessarily what I'm expecting. I just want to see an overall lift in the quality of our midfield play and, you know, being able to dictate the game more from midfield, if you like.
Yeah. Well, I think he helps you do that. And actually, in the short time he was on the pitch, I think Xhaka made the most tackles for Arsenal, but Partey, I think, was second by the end of the 90 minutes. And he made a number of really good interventions to help us regain possession. He does seem to move the ball a little bit quicker, which I think will bring something to the midfield. And I'm glad that he wasn't rushed back and started as well. You know, it seems like we've taken our time with him this time, and you know, that's definitely the right approach given how little we've seen of him.
Okay, but do you start him on Monday?
I would be extremely tempted to. Yeah. And obviously they've got more information than me, but I would be very, very tempted to. And actually I know it famously didn't work. I think it was the Leicester game where they played Xhaka, Ceballos and Partey. I don't know if you remember. And
I've probably blocked it out.
it was pretty much a disaster. It was one of those where kind of Xhaka, kind of in the way, similar fashion to Luis, as you described earlier, was very kind of domineering.
Is this the one where they said, like, he doesn't pass to Partey? Yeah, was that that game?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I do kind of think if I was picking a partnership right now, I personally would be tempted to try Xhaka and Partey. I do think that might be the best bet. But, you know, I wouldn't be upset to see Ceballos and Partey either.
Okay. Well, we'll wait and see what he does on Monday. Partey was one of the subs. Nicolas Pepe was the first sub on.
Yeah, Xhaka going in at left back, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that made sense to me, really. You know, given how much of a struggle Ainsley had found it, you know, who have you got that can slot in there? You either put Granit Xhaka in at left back, and I don't think that's necessarily a good idea when you're playing a team that is looking to hit you on the break, which is, you know, the way Palace played, and with Zaha, with Eze, and what have you. You know, they do have players who can hurt you there. So that really wasn't an option for me. So Saka was basically the only option we had there. You know, it does take something away from the attacking third because he has been so good, but we're looking for Pepe to come on. And, you know, after the Newcastle game, I think I was, you know, I saw some things in there that I quite liked from Pepe, but, you know, he really finds it difficult to make an impact in this team, doesn't he?
He does. And, you know, I don't want to sound overly harsh on the player because I don't think he was kind of diabolical or anything like it. But it was a real opportunity, wasn't it? Like, this was a game that needed unlocking. You've got an attacking player coming on, incredibly skillful, someone who in theory could have provided the solution for Arsenal and just really didn't, you know, it really underwhelmed. And I mean, interesting that Willian, by the way, didn't even get off the bench, I thought, given where he was in Arteta's thoughts a little while ago. But yeah, not great for Pepe. I mean, what do we say? What can we add at this point? It's very difficult, isn't it? We've kind of, but if you, it's funny, you think back to the end of last season and it really felt like he found something and was building something at Arsenal, and that just feels a million miles away now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's you know, with every week, with every performance, it's, you know, well, yeah, like you say, what more can we say? It just isn't working, not in the way that we expected, and not for, again, it's just sort of impossible to have the conversation about him without mentioning the price tag. You know, and again, it's not like, to put it on Pepe, it's not his fault. No. We know that. But when you make that level of investment in a player, there are expectations. There are a level of expectations that you have for a player and what he can produce and how consistently he can produce it. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's right to reference the price tag. I think it's a shame because it's going to follow the player everywhere. But I think you're correct. It's just impossible to divorce it because essentially that is the signing that Arsenal or the people running Arsenal kind of put all their chips on, you know? And so for it to not work is really a disaster. And yeah, I think I even said, you know, I hope Pepe is kind of the first man off the bench, and he was. But it wouldn't surprise me if he's not in the next game.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the sad part about that is that there's somebody else going to come on who hasn't been good either. So it is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of resource and a lot of money tied up in two right wingers who ain't doing much between them, to be honest. And I mean, I do have one bit of sympathy for Pepe in that I think it's difficult when you're not a regular, you know, it's, you don't have that rhythm to your game and you're coming on and expected to produce, but that is the hole that he's in and he's got to dig himself out of it.
Or not.
Or not, as the case may be. Yeah. Like I said, I have this growing feeling that, you know, the summer could be one where he moves on.
Mm. So, overall, maybe a little bit of a reality check. I think we all enjoyed the last four games, and obviously we've won those, and those get expectations a little bit high. But I think probably what it shows is that this team, if anybody had lost sight of that, and I'm not sure that they did, I think everybody's been relatively realistic about, you know, how much we've done in the last couple of weeks in comparison to what happened in the previous 4 or 5 weeks before that. You know, we're all aware, you don't forget, but just a little reminder that in order to produce on a consistent basis, week in, week out, for more than four games, for more than 10 days or 2 weeks, we still have some way to go, I think.
Definitely, definitely. And I mean, you know, the most sort of simple way I could put it, I don't think we're quite as bad as we looked in our bad run. I don't think we're as good as we looked in our recent good run. Mm. You know, we are quite a middle-of-the-road team, frankly, and with a long, long way to go. And so, yeah, it was a bit sort of sobering, but at least we didn't lose. We take away, you know, a clean sheet. We take away that we continue a run without defeat, which stretches to, you know, 4 or 5 games, whatever it is. And we're quite fortunate in that we've got an opportunity to put it right quite quickly with another home game, haven't we, on Monday night against Newcastle?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to recognise as well that Newcastle were a team that held us to 0-0 in 90 minutes.
And it will be a similar challenge,
yeah.
I would expect.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's got to look at what we've done in the last couple of games and try and put some of that right. Of course, we beat Newcastle, but we needed 120 minutes to do it, and we had 2 goals in the last whatever it was, 15 minutes or something like that. So,
yeah.
You know, we're not going to get that extra half an hour. So we've got to find a solution in the 90 minutes to be more effective from an attacking perspective. So, yeah, I mean, I think it is good that we can get back on the horse quickly. But, yeah, there's got to be a significant improvement from what we've seen.
True. Well, fingers crossed for that. Kieran Tierney MRI in that case.
Jesus. Okay. Will we leave it there for part one?
Let's do that.
We'll leave it there for part one, and we'll come back. We've got questions and all those kind of things in part two right after this.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Because it was a dismal, dull draw, how about a competition for some socks?
Yes, please.
All right. Our friends at soccerclub.com, that's soccer, spelled like sock rather than soccer, like the game soccer. I'm overthinking this, but you know what I mean. Soccerclub.com. They've got some new socks based on the Blue Lightning 1995 away kit. We've got five pairs to give away. All you have to do is answer the question that I forgot to think of. So let's think of a question.
Which player... which Crystal Palace player did Mikel Arteta effectively step onto the pitch to tackle during last night's game?
That's a good one. Answers, please, to competition@arsblog.com. That's competition@arsblog.com. We've got five pairs of socks to give away. There's also a 10% discount if you go to soccerclub.com and use the code arsblog10 at checkout. We'll give you the winners on Tuesday show because we've got an Arscast Extra on Tuesday. So competition@arsblog.com. Which player did Mikel Arteta tackle? He looked quite grumpy about it as well. Late in the second half. I mean, that was you know, he wanted
it was
to get
a strange
stuck in.
Reaction, wasn't it? It was like I almost thought my screen had frozen because Arteta had gone into full kind of death stare mode. The Terminator eyes kind of flickered there.
Yeah.
But listen, given the player it was, I don't blame him.
No, me neither. Me neither. So that's a big clue. Was it a former Tottenham player or something? I don't know. Maybe we're giving too many hints. So there's the competition for you. Right. Will we get on with the questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. You go first.
Okay. There were a lot of questions about left backs and the left back situation. So one here from Lee Eagle on Discord says, do we need a left-footed sub-left-back? Without Tierney, Auba found himself on the touchline too often, and the one time Ainsley Maitland-Niles got down the line, his delivery was as wayward as Hermes at Christmas. Emil Smith-Bro at Gunnar DS said, with Tierney now integral and seemingly here for the long haul, what profile of player should we target for the left-back slot? And basically a lot of people saying... oh, God, I've just realised we need a left-back.
Yes, there's a bit of that going around. I did see a great handle this morning somewhere on Twitter. I apologise, I can't find it right now, but I think it's Emil Deathrow. There's a lot going on there with Emil, so fair play to him. What kind of a player do we need? That's a really good question. I mean, I think what we absolutely need is natural left-back cover for Kieran Tierney. You know, we know that Maitland-Niles can provide... cover. We know, well, we're told that Cedric can play in both fullback positions. This was one of the things that was said when we signed him, when people raised some concerns about the signing. It was like, well, you know, he can play left back and he can play right back as well. So he gives us cover in two positions. We have never seen him play left back and we've rarely seen him play right back in the Premier League. So, yeah, I'm a little bit...
He's actually a number 10. We just won't play him in his true his true calling.
Fuck's sake, Arteta misusing players again. Yeah, I'm cautious about Cedric as a left-back option. I think we absolutely need a natural left-footed left-back. Now, I accept that there are some difficulties involved in that. You know, when you have a player like Kieran Tierney, who when he's fit is going to play every week in the Premier League, you know, what kind of player do you bring in? What kind of player can you attract? You know, do you promote somebody from within and provide competition? Do you sign a grizzled veteran and let him, you know, be the Lichtsteiner to the Bellerin? I'm not sure that's really the case either. And any left back worth his salt who wants to play ain't going to come to just sit behind Kieran Tierney. So I accept that there are difficulties in terms of sorting that situation out, but it does not negate the issue itself in that we need a player in that position. So get to it, Edu. That would be
Yeah, I agree. And in fairness to Gunnar Dias, I cut off the second half of his question, but they said any player coming in will surely realise there's zero room to truly compete for the starting spot. I don't know about that. I mean, never underestimate the arrogance of professional athletes. I mean, I do think a lot of the time they back themselves, even when we from the outside can look at it and go, well, obviously you're never going to replace Kieran Tierney. In their mind, they're like, well, all I need is an injury. All I need is an opportunity and I can make this place my own. I think you just have to buy... You just have to buy a good left-back, don't you?
Is it beyond the realms of possibility that you could look in the championship somewhere and find a young-ish left-back who's got potential, who won't cost the earth, who could come in and, you know, accept the fact that Tierney is first choice, but at the same time look at a move to a club like Arsenal as a step up and think, this is a great opportunity. I could play cup games. I could play some Europa League games. You know, players get injured and Tierney... you know, hopefully he isn't too badly injured. But, you know, situations like this are where an opportunity will knock for that particular player. So I find it hard to believe that there isn't, you know, a player out there who would fit the profile of player we need in that position. I'm not saying you can go and get another Kieran Tierney. I don't think that's realistic. But I do think you could find a good young player. And I think this has been one of the flaws in our recruitment policy is that we don't look down the divisions well enough.
For sure, yeah.
You know?
I mean, look at Rob Holding. We signed him when he was relegated from the Championship, I believe. So that's
Cost 55 million.
Yeah. But, you know, I think there are bargains to be found. Mm. I don't know if you saw Dom of Ask Blog News fame.
Yes.
Did a nice piece. Did you read that piece?
I did. I sort of read over it very quickly last night. He is going to post it up on Ask Blog News as well today.
Oh, so great. Well, what keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he's done like a kind of stat scouting look at potential left backs that we could bring in, right?
And video scouting as well. Mm. And he does actually identify... a 19-year-old in the Championship playing for Derby County, Lee Buchanan, as an option. I mean, that's the kind of thing I think Arsenal should probably look to do. They do have an 18-year-old Joel Lopez who apparently has had a very good season with the under-23s, but we've never seen him really in the senior setup. So that might feel like a bit of a gamble. But if they really believe in him, he was brought over from Barcelona, wasn't he, in his mid-teens, then maybe you do promote him. I do kind of think that having a left-footed left-back clearly is going to be quite important to the way we play. It's not the same as putting Maitland-Niles in as a left wing-back, you know, with Tierney outside him. It's just not quite the same thing.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, part of the reason why Aubameyang was more on the left-hand side than we would have liked is because of that, you know, the ability of Tierney to get around the outside and... Mm. Put crosses in and deliver the ball into the penalty area allows Aubameyang the opportunity or whatever to move centrally. Whereas when you've got a player like Maitland-Niles who isn't that comfortable on his left foot, who isn't going to beat the guy on the outside, who then comes back inside in order to create space and to stretch things a little bit, Aubameyang found himself on the left-hand side, hugging the touchline far, far more than I think we needed, or he needed to be, you know?
I agree. And even when we played with the back three, Tierney was still getting up there and providing the width on that side. So I just think without him, we really struggled. Can I ask you then?
Yeah.
Because we all came into this window going, oh, we need number 10. We need a creative midfield player. And now we're sort of looking at goalkeeper. We're sort of looking at left back as a fan base at any rate. How do you kind of rank those three needs in this transfer window?
Yeah, there was a question on the Discord from Stickers who said, watching the game reinforced the need for reinforcements. Where do you think we need to reinforce most? I'm heartened by the fact that they're looking for a goalkeeper. I think that's important. We might never need that player between now and the end of the season, but I think from a sense of security and just knowing we have some cover, I'm sort of torn a little bit on what we need. I still think the attacking midfield player is an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And I like what Smith Rowe has done. I thought Palace were quite clever last night in that they blocked off a lot of the passing lanes to him, so he couldn't connect the play the way that he has. I think he grew into the game. He became a bit more influential as the game went on, but I still think that is an important part of the puzzle. But I think it is such an important part of the puzzle that it's crucial that we get that signing right. You know, we have to get the right player, not for the next 6 months or between now and the end of the season, as important as it would be to have him. We've got to get the player who can be part of this team and grow with this team for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. That is the key part of that attacking midfield signing for me, right? Yeah. So it becomes a little more difficult to find that player in January, I think.
Let me reframe it then. Yeah. So if we couldn't, let's say, find the permanent transfers we wanted in January, if I said to you, we can make one signing on loan and it could be a goalkeeper, a left back or an attacking midfielder. See, for me,
really difficult. My panic button says goalkeeper.
Right, because you're worried.
I'm really quite worried about that. Like, just from the point of view that I think, okay, the options we have at left back are imperfect, but we could, much as I don't particularly want to see it, you know, Bakayo Saka can play there and play very well there and be very effective there, right? I think it's certainly a serviceable option, even if it means from the right-hand side we're dealing with a player in Pepe who hasn't produced on a consistent basis and Willian who hasn't produced at all bar one game. Right?
Yeah.
So I accept there's a trade-off there, but I do think there is a solution inside the squad. Attacking midfield, you know, again, you look at what Smith Rowe has done. I know he had a quieter game last night, but maybe if we talk about Partey coming back in and being a bit more controlling in midfield and changing the way that the midfield operates, it might work well for someone like Smith Rowe. But I'm not sure we've got the cover at goalkeeper at Premier League level if something goes wrong with Leno, as it did last season. So I know people will differ with this and will say, look, your goalkeeper, chances are he's going to go through the rest of the season without picking up an injury. Get in the attacking midfield player. I get it, but just my own personal, like, if I think about it, my heart, my gut says goalkeeper. But
interesting.
Yeah, I accept that this is a very personal thing for me. So, you know, people will, what would you do?
I think I would kind of, the gambler in me would say go for the attacking midfield player because I think the other two are kind of the security options, you know, their backup for if something bad happens. Whereas I feel like potentially this attacking midfield player is the starting player, you know, just simply because we don't really know what we're going to get from Smith Rowe between now and the end of the season. Whereas if we have Leno fit, if we have Tierney fit, we will be okay. But one thing I will say, I'd be very surprised if Arsenal get all of those deals done.
No, I don't see. I think maybe one.
Yeah, same. So, you know, we're going to have a bit of anxiety in some area of the pitch, whatever happens. But also, I kind of think with Kieran Tierney, maybe there is an extent to which, you know, when you lose one of your best players, it is just going to hurt your team, isn't it? And you have to accept that. That's kind of the price of having some really, really good players. You know, last season, if we'd lost Aubameyang, it would have felt like it killed us. And this season, Tierney's kind of that guy.
And I think we have to take into account circumstances as well, because, you know, fingers crossed this is not the case, but what if Tierney has an injury that's going to keep him out for a while?
Yeah.
Then I think that sort of forces your hand a little bit. If you're going to be without Tierney for a couple of weeks, you go, okay.
Well, that changes the priority if it's a long time. Yeah.
But do you remember when we signed Nacho Monreal?
Yeah.
I think there was an issue where Kieran Gibbs had got injured and Andre Santos.
Was Andre.
But also got injured. Yeah. I'm not sure his injury was quite as long term as perhaps they made it out to be. It was like, oh no, he's injured. We better go buy a left back. Let's go get a left
back. Sorry, Andre. There's nothing we can do.
No, it's fine. I'll be fit in 2 days. No.
Shh, fingers in their ears.
You know,
and they were going to bring him in the summer, and it was a deal they sort of brought forward, basically.
Yeah. So let's see. Let's see what happens there.
I haven't heard many people crying out for Sead Kolasinac to come back. That's the interesting thing, isn't it? Nobody's looking at it going, oh, we shouldn't have sent Kolasinac to Schalke. Everyone's fine with that, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, look, I mean, the only thing is, you know, he is that natural cover. You couldn't really pine for Kolasinac, even if last night you could see we needed a player in that position. It's not like, I wish we had Kolasinac back. I'm not sure that's the case. Here's a couple from the Discord. One from Cazorla's Left Foot, who says, what are your thoughts on the appointment of Richard Garlick as the director of football? Will he add possible value with his Premier League experience, or simply be a clear specialist who'll be performing tasks given to him by Edu? And Daniel Refat says, morning, gents. With the news, Arsenal have hired Richard Garlick. Love the name, because who doesn't love garlic? I don't love garlic. I don't love it. I mean, it's
okay.
No.
I love garlic.
I think garlic is important. It adds a depth of flavour to stuff, but I don't like things that taste too garlicky.
Really? I eat raw garlic sometimes.
You are a monster.
Yeah, delicious.
Anyway, he says, hiring Richard, I'm very disturbed by this. The idea of just crunching on a raw clove of garlic is
insane. That's my favourite.
Oh my God, what is wrong with you?
And you feel it kind of burning your esophagus as you eat it. Pity my wife, of course. But I'm just trying to prove I'm not a vampire. That's my life story, guys.
Well, I mean, how often do you have to prove that? I mean, what are you doing in your life that you need to prove this on a frequent basis?
Yeah.
I swear I'm not the vampire. No, the body there with all the bite marks in the neck is not me.
It's all the bodies. It's all the bodies.
Anyway, he's talking about Richard Garlick. He says, I was wondering if you knew anything about him and how he could help us move forward. So this is a story that's come from your athletic colleague, David Ornstein. So, you know, give us all the sus on Dickie Garlick.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, not someone that I knew loads about prior to this news breaking. Since then, I've had a few conversations with people who know him from his role at West Brom, where I think he works alongside Dan Ashworth there. And they all speak very, you know, positively of him, as you would hope and expect. Very efficient guy, very nice guy, sensible man. He apparently at the Premier League played quite an important role in getting Project Restart off the ground. So I think anyone who could sort of deal with that administrative mess will be relatively well suited to coming into Arsenal. But, you know, it's difficult to say. I mean, he's going to be there primarily as a contracts guy. He's not going to be someone who changes the business Arsenal do, but he might change how they do it.
Yeah, you know? He is. I think he has a background in sports law. He's a solicitor, but he has a background in not just, you know, regular law. Did I read he's got a sports science law talking guy degree or whatever it is?
Sounds about right. I couldn't say with any certainty, but that sounds about right. I mean, listen, it's a really... Who knows if this appointment would attract the headlines and the breaking news and the scrutiny that it does at Arsenal at other clubs. I can't say, because I'm not a fan of those other teams and I'm not embroiled in that world. But Arsenal is something we're interested in. I mean, I kind of have this feeling that if Richard Garlick is good at his job, we won't talk much about Richard Garlick. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I hope that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that we sort of never, I mean, with respect to Richard Garlick, I hope that we kind of never really speak about him again because, you know, we never hear a story about Richard Garlick accidentally wrote the contract upside down or, you know, he put the font in Windings and none of the players could understand it.
Instead of a buyback clause, we have to pay them even more.
Exactly. So fingers crossed. He just does his job efficiently. What's really clear is that Arsenal needed somebody in this role. I mean, Edu's speciality is not contract law or numbers specifically. So we need that person alongside them. I don't think Arsenal were ever inclined to make the kind of head of football, director of football, czar of football, whatever you want to call it, appointment above Edu that a lot of fans are hoping for. But at least this is someone in the building with, you know, the right knowledge, the right qualification.
Sure. I mean, the Guardian say he will oversee football operations in the first team and academy, as well as player contract management and relationships with football's governing bodies. It means Arsenal will benefit from the services of a qualified solicitor and sports law specialist who possesses clout at the top level, as well as a proven track record. He spent 8 years at West Brom, where he was director of football administration. I mean, we've often bemoaned the fact that we don't sign players from other Premier League clubs,
lower clubs.
So there you go. But like you, I hope we're not sitting here, you know, in 6 months' time, going Garlick, goddamn you.
I mean, I'm sure we will because you know the nature of Arsenal fans is we find the minutiae kind of fascinating. But
Doris the D Lady.
But I think that's absolutely right. That if this ship is sailing smoothly, we probably won't be talking about Richard Garlick too much.
Do we get the sense that this is, you know, we brought on board, what's the guy's name? The guy, the KSE lawyer guy.
Tim.
Tim Lewis. I mean, he's a law-talking guy as well. So are we to assume that he's been involved in this process in sort of weeding out the sort of Lionel Hutzes of the world and bringing in the actual, you know, the footballing Matlock that is Richard Garlick?
Don't know that for a fact, but wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you'd think the people involved in the interview process would be, the likeliest would be Tim Lewis, Edu and Vinay. So, yeah, I'm sure he's had a role.
Okay.
And that, I guess, brings a degree of comfort given his background too. But we shall see. I mean, we don't know when he'll arrive. He's got a fairly lengthy notice period with the Premier League, but equally it's been suggested that other Premier League clubs won't be desperate for him to hang around the Premier League now that he's an Arsenal employee, effectively. So maybe we might get him a bit sooner than anticipated. But he's not going to be in this transfer window, I wouldn't think.
Okay.
So Eddie's on his own for now. Okay, let's have another question. Okay, Henrik Hall on Twitter. What's the deal with our set pieces? It seems like we try something new every time and it never works. Yesterday, with all the players huddling together for corners, earlier weird free kicks that seemed to fool everyone, including our own players.
I've been looking at the set pieces and the way we set up from corners and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
Alan
sure
Smith was quite cutting, I thought, on his commentary last night. I don't know if you had Alan Smith, but he said, "Yeah, they've got some inventive routines, Arsenal." And it was just like when your art teacher tells you your work's interesting.
Yeah, interesting,
I mean?
Is a great word. Oh, look, I've created this lovely dish. Have a taste. What do you think? Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. I assume there is some method to the apparent madness.
Yeah.
It just strikes me that when all your players are in a very small bunch, does it make it less likely that you're going to get one of your players on the ball? Whereas if you're spread out a little bit, I know they kind of spread out as the ball comes in, but, you know, if you were to spread your players out, does that not spread out the opposition? Like, if all your players are in this small bunch and you aim the ball at the small bunch, you've got a small bunch of Arsenal players and a small bunch of defenders and not much space to attack the ball. I don't quite get it. I just wonder if, you know, some players arriving from the edge of the box might be a nice addition to things like this. I mean, again, I saw last night, and I can't believe this is coincidence in any way, but Hector Bellerin was marking Christian Benteke from corners. And this is a theme that's been ongoing for the last few weeks, where Bellerin is basically marking the best, one of the most, the opposition's most effective players in the air. And yeah, I don't quite know what that is.
I don't know either. I could possibly play it out in my mind and think, well, maybe Arsenal have put their best headers kind of in zones, because we use a combination of zones and man marking. And then maybe Benteke or whoever it is looks at that and thinks, right, well, I'm not going to go and stand there because that's where Luiz stands, or whatever it might be. And so consequently, Bellerin ends up picking these players up. And then if they come into the other player's zone, that responsibility transfers. But defensively, we've been a lot better than offensive on the set pieces, right?
Yeah.
Our record's pretty good, I believe, defensively. Maybe the second best.
I saw Urbino doom tweeting about the amount of about the amount of corners that have actually connected with an Arsenal man so far this season. And I think it's -5 out of 7 trillion corners, something like that.
Yeah. I think it's in the attacking side that I'm seeing the problems. I must say, actually, I thought Bukayo Saka's delivery yesterday was some of the best I've seen of an Arsenal team for a while.
There was a really good late free kick, wasn't there? They did very well to defend it, but the delivery was delicious. If you're trying to attack that ball, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, and there were a couple of others, like maybe it was his corner, I'm not sure, from the left that found Luiz at the back post.
I think he would have been offside, wouldn't he?
Right, yeah. And there were basically his delivery was his best for a while and probably Arsenal's best for a while. So maybe that's a skill he is developing. That would be very useful, because we hit the first man with such a frustrating percentage of our set pieces. I don't know. When you have a specific set piece coach, it's kind of inevitable that will come under the microscope, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it does sometimes feel like unnecessary overcomplication that isn't providing results. So I can understand people's frustrations there. At least we seem to be getting away defensively. But I agree, the small fullback marking tall attacker at defenders is interesting.
Yeah, here was a quite an interesting one from Jahanzaib Khan. Hope I've said that right. He's at JahanzaibFab4 on Twitter. Yeah. He says, "I've noticed recently that players, while taking corners, try to place the ball over the curve line in order to gain a minimal advantage when the referee is not nearby. I think there was a couple of times Saka was made put the ball back a couple of inches last night. If a goal is scored from such a corner, would or should VAR intervene to overrule it?" I'm not sure about that, but I don't really understand what they're doing. I don't get why they can't just put the ball in the what do you call it?
I haven't spotted this. Is this something you've seen?
Yeah,
as well?
They do it all the time. Players do it. They put it right on the outside of the what do you call it? The little fucking cornery, circly hoo-ha.
Ringy bit.
The ringy bit. Yeah. They put it outside that, and I don't know why. Because, like, if you can't kick the ball into the box as a professional footballer from inside that little circular fucking doohickey, what's it called? Like, what difference is 3 inches going to make? What are they trying to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And in a time of VAR, it does feel like if the technology exists for them to kind of catch that out, they absolutely will.
Mm.
It's a game of fine margins, but surely not that fine.
No.
Yeah, weird one.
Weird one.
What about this?
Okay.
Vashist on the Discord says, should we try Pepe on the left-hand side to speed up his play? And Callum Buchanan on Twitter says, is Pepe too left-footed to play on the right? He can't cross the ball without cutting into his left foot, which is very easy for defenders to read. Would playing him on the left allow him to find players in the box more naturally?
I don't know about this one. I think there were a couple of Europa League games, weren't there, where he played on the left and he was okay.
I seem to remember him doing it at Anfield as well in the League Cup, maybe.
I can't remember that. But I just think fundamentally the issue is that he is a player who thrives in a counter-attacking team. He needs space in front of him to be as effective as he can be.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does have some skills. He does have ability. He does have talent. But I don't think when faced with 10 or 11 defenders behind the ball, when he's being double teamed time and time again, as soon as he gets the ball out on the right hand side, I just don't think that's, you know, after 18 months, maybe a bit more, I think we can say that's not where the strengths in his game are.
Yeah, I do think it's weird the degree to which we assume it's kind of transferable. That he played in a very counter-attacking team at Lille, kind of breaking from one end of the field to the other. And at Arsenal, the kind of problem that needs to be solved is often playing against massed ranks of a defence. And it's a very, very different circumstance and situation. And I do understand people making the leap of, oh, well, I saw him dribble past a guy, you know, in France on a counter-attack, therefore why can't he just dribble past this guy in front of him? But it is just so different. I do wonder if we're kind of expecting him to be something that there is no evidence that he is. It doesn't mean he couldn't do it, but it's not something he's done with any great track record.
Yeah, I mean, there was another one on the Discord from, let me have a look here. I'm just increasing the font size so I can see it because I'm sitting back. Jithin Krishnan on the Discord, who says, were the club justified in denying Emery the signing of Zaha? He's almost as frustrating a player to watch as Pepe is. And again, you know, just a quick observation is that, you know, when it came to squad building or strategizing or whatever it was, you know, maybe they looked at Zaha and said, okay, he's a player who has to play in a team which sits deep and then counters, and he can dribble at opponents. He's good on the ball. He can go past them, et cetera, and create danger that way. I don't know if you listened to the podcast that he did with Jamie Carragher, the Greatest Game podcast.
Actually,
it's quite interesting. It's not one of the greatest episodes, but you know, he talks very specifically about where he feels he's strong, and the kind of team he likes to play in is one which is organized, sits deep, and then can break.
Right.
So if Arsenal were denying Emery Zaha, maybe in part because they thought, well, that's not the kind of game that we play. We need more front-footed players. We need players who can take, you know, a bit more responsibility when we're dealing with a opposition that we're, you know, supposed to beat, et cetera, in inverted commas, of course. You know, we need to be more proactive. If that was part of the rationale as to why we didn't sign Zaha, you know, the same could very much apply to Pepe.
Well, that's it. I think there are tremendous similarities, and you know, Zaha, he can be a very frustrating player to watch. And I think the degree to which, you know, he kind of plays for the referee is, I'm sure, irritating to many. But I think that is sort of a function of the team he's playing in and the role he has. Like, he's often the guy, you know, 30 yards further ahead than any other Crystal Palace player. Mm. And a lot of his game is about making territory and making ground and keeping the ball away from the Palace goal. It's very difficult to predict, as with Pepe, what he would have been like coming into the Arsenal team. You know, you kind of, it's inevitable comparisons will be drawn. But I do sometimes wonder about that with Emery. Was his plan, in as far as there was one, to be more of a counter-attacking team? I don't know. But we never saw it with any efficacy.
No, I mean...
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Maybe it was. But, you know, again, this comes back to, is that the right way for Arsenal to play? Or the Arsenal that we expect Arsenal to be? It's not that you shouldn't be able to counter-attack. Being effective on the counter-attack was a huge part of what made Wenger's team so great. You know, you think about... Think about that goal we scored against Spurs. You know, the Vieira goal where they have a corner and within sort of 7 seconds, it's Henri to Bergkamp to Vieira and it's in the back of their fucking net. Right? That's an important part of how we were able to play, but it wasn't the basis of our game.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a really a key part of it. But I kind of think the problem statement at Arsenal right now is... Teams come and sit deep against us and defend, and we don't know what to do about it. And, you know, I'm not convinced. Well, yeah, and that's what needs to be solved.
Yeah.
And I know we all know that, but I think it's important when considering the type of players we look at in the transfer market that they're players who can solve that problem.
Okay, let's have one more quick one, and then we've got the return of a feature that everybody, I'm sure, is dying to hear. We've got a couple here from Sam on Twitter, who's at Mighty Mongoose 7, who says, given the imbalance last night, the lack of creativity down the left, and Lacazette in good form, although I'm not sure he had a great game last night, not that it was all his fault, is it worth having a conversation about Aubameyang being dropped at this point? We don't have a lot of options, but I'd probably prefer to see Gabby, Martinelli, or Pepe on the left. And then there was one here from Suhail Parmar, who's at sparmar1105, who says, Morning. Aubameyang is really struggling to make an impact in the league. Why doesn't Arteta rest/rotate him out like he did with other players when they were out of form? For example, Lacazette was rotated out, then went on a scoring streak.
I think it's taken us this long, maybe, to mention Gabriel Martinelli in the podcast, which, if so, that's an oversight on my part, because... You know, as much as the absence of Tierney hurt us, I do think Martinelli has brought something pretty special to the team in the last few weeks. And we missed a bit of that as well. The Aubameyang question, I mean, it is difficult. It is difficult to be, I think, too critical of your finishers, as it were, when the team create nothing, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, like you, I don't think Lacazette had a great game, but there was no service. I suppose the problem you have with Aubameyang is he's not someone... he's not the kind of winger who is hugely creative. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be someone who beats his man and swings in a brilliant cross. Although I think there was one decent cross last night. Do I think we should drop him?
It's complicated by the captaincy issue as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but I guess that is true. To be honest, if Martinelli's fit, I think it's a conversation again. I think without Martinelli, I think you've got to play him. I think you need his goal threat. You need everything he brings.
With Martinelli, do you still play him, but do you play him as the centre forward?
I think if you're going to play him, that's where.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be... It would be harsh on Lacazette, I think, given what he has brought in recent weeks and the way he's linked up with Smith Rowe and Saka.
Yeah.
Maybe Aubameyang can do it too, but I'm not convinced. I don't think Arteta should shy away from not starting Aubameyang. I know the captaincy weighs heavy in this conversation, but the question is right. Lacazette was kind of left out for a couple of weeks and did come back looking fresher, looking more motivated. And sometimes a player needs that, you know? And I think Aubameyang has been brilliant for Arsenal, but I don't think Arteta should pick him on seniority. You know what I mean? What do you think?
I think he is our most natural goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And we need to score goals. And I recognize that, you know, in the Premier League, he hasn't really done it this season. I think there are mitigating circumstances. I would like to see with Martinelli back on the left-hand side, I think I'd like to see a bit of a run with him there and Aubameyang in the center and just see what kind of connection they can make. But of course, part of what made... Martinelli was really effective with Kieran Tierney. I thought that, you know, they were a partnership.
Absolutely.
That really clicked and have clicked from day one. You know, going back to when Emery was in charge, those two guys combined from pretty much the start when Tierney came back into the team. And I know it was Europa League and what have you, but they've got an understanding there, which I think has gone some way to making Martinelli... I don't want to take anything. I'm not taking anything away from his talent or his ability or his potential or anything like that. But I think part of the reason why he flourished so quickly was because of how good he and Tierney were together. So I think there's something in that might just be a little bit of a concern if Tierney's going to be out for a little while. But I think there was, for me, there were encouraging signs in Aubameyang's movement. But his play in the final third wasn't great. But, you know, this is a long season. And I think I'd just be more inclined to give him another few games to see if you can get him back into the rhythm properly.
If you can, the value of that is enormous.
Yeah, that's the thing. That the upside of that is really significant. So,
and I do think he scored, albeit an extra time, against Newcastle in the Cup. I think he had a decent enough game against West Brom. Arsenal generally were very good as an attacking unit. So I think his trajectory has been a bit better in terms of his performances.
Sure.
So, yeah, I don't think they're going to throw Martinelli straight back into the starting lineup. So I think he will play against Newcastle. Let's put it like that.
Okay. All right. Well, look, that's just about that. But, of course, we have a game on Monday. We'll have an Arsecast Extra on Tuesday. We're facing Newcastle, who are known as the Magpies. So it's time for a bit of this.
Magpies, living in the garden. Watch out, magpies, they'll peck out your eyes. Magpies, flying in the sky, black and white. Magpies, behold his mighty beak, his feathers are as black as his heart, and his shoes.
Vicious meat-eating magpie bastards.
James, take it away.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's 2021. Welcome to the brand new, all singing, all dancing, all squawking Magpie Facts. It is an honour and a privilege to be here. And what reward to those people who stayed with a 90-minute podcast about a 0-0 draw with Crystal Palace. This has made it all worthwhile, I presume.
I can't wait. I'm so excited about this. I assume that given the length of time it's been since our last Magpie Facts, this fact has got to be, it's got to be off the charts.
Right. Okay. Well, it's been a weird time for everyone, hasn't it? And it's no less weird for the Magpies. I give you the following headline. Eerie footage. This is a newspaper headline from a newspaper in England that is horrible and I don't want to mention. Eerie footage shows a man being stalked by a terrifying flock of 30 magpies on the street.
Uh-oh.
With the birds chirping in unison and running behind him. And then the subtitle, a man was followed by 30 magpies as he walked down a quiet suburban street. The man filmed the native birds run and fly after him in Melbourne last week.
Oh, of course, that's it was in fucking Australia, the Australian magpies.
Base. That's where their lair is. That's where the magpies HQ.
The truly evil magpies are down under, that's for sure.
Much like humans, the really evil ones are in Australia. And I turned around. I love all Australian listeners. I turned around and realised I was being stalked by 30 magpies. Imagine this man's terror. Listen, we've got quotes from the man in question about this terrifying video footage.
Okay.
As I walked along, I noticed one magpie following me, then three, then four.
Is it the count from Sesame Street? One magpie.
You missed two.
Three
magpies.
I've got
bad news, mate. Uh-oh. You missed two. I turned around and realised I was being stalked by 30 magpies. Some were in the trees. Some were on the power lines. But this, and I think this is the most chilling aspect of all, most running along the ground following me.
Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you.
There's something more frightening about them pursuing on foot.
There
you
is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at first I thought maybe this guy is some kind of magpie Pied Piper, and he was leading them to their death, to some kind of cliff. Well, I mean, of course they can fly. I don't know how racks off a cliff is. How
imagine
do you do it?
Going to all the effort of buying a special magic pipe, playing a little tune on it, getting all the magpies to follow you to the edge of a cliff, only to remember
they can fly. Those fucking
that would
bastards.
Be a devastating blow. Back to the drawing board.
You'd have to lead them into some kind of mincer or something like that. But I mean, could it be
a pie?
A magpie pie. Blackboard. I mean, could it have been a scent that he was wearing? I mean, maybe we're doing the magpies a disservice here. What if this guy was wearing Lynx Africa and they've had enough? They're like, fuck
what do you
this.
Mean?
Well, I mean, it's
they've
just,
had enough of Lynx Africa.
Yeah, it's just an appalling smell and they're not taking it anymore. And they're
alternatively, maybe they are attracted to the smell of Lynx Africa.
Well,
maybe
well,
the next Lynx advert is going to be a guy spraying himself under his arms. It's called Axe in America, if you're wondering what we're talking about. It's got a different name, bizarrely. And then he walks down the street and all the magpies just start following him. That's backfired if that happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to do much for sales.
They're not the sort of birds that you want to attract.
That's
terrible, isn't it?
That
is
bad.
Really that is bad. From a professional comedian, that is actually really shameful.
There's no way you're getting on Mock the Week now.
The article signs off, by the way, with a quite harrowing story. Last year, two victims suffered serious eye injuries after magpie swoops and had to go under emergency surgery.
No, yeah. I mean, ugh.
Yeah. James Glinderman, 68, was sitting on a park bench eating some Chinese takeaway for lunch. How decadent. Near the Gippsland shopping centre, when a young magpie appeared at his feet, looking all cute, I imagine. Looking all like, oh, hi, guys.
Look, I've been Chinese, I love being a Chinese.
Yeah. And then it looked at me. I didn't give it any Chinese food, so it just attacked me.
Well, there's the downfall. Give him a bit of your chow mein. Come on.
Give him a little prawn or whatever. Just help him out.
Chicken
and he'll
ball.
Leave you alone.
Yeah.
It's like the mafia. It's the magpie mafia. They come around. You give them their protection money. They're on your side. If you don't want to play that game, you will pay the consequences.
Yeah, but you know what? There's no warning. It's not like next time you're going to get it. Straight away, he's pecking your fucking eye out.
Well,
I mean,
he's probably already done one. So this James Glinderman, he needs to be careful. He'll lose the other one. And
I liked it when you said James Glinderman 68. I immediately thought that was his Twitter handle.
He's got a question here for the Ask Us. What's wrong with Pepe? Thanks, James. We don't know. So there you go. So the magpies still up to their old tricks.
All right. Well, you know, wherever
you
are.
No, Andrew.
Go on.
What the people want would be for me to provide a new jingle for 2021 for the magpies.
Are you sure?
I am sure, and I think even if you're not sure, I think at home, they're banging on the tables, they're jumping up and down, and thinking, where's the new jingle, James? Where is it?
Okay, well look, I will, you know, I trust you, we've been doing this a long time, you know the audience well, so, you know, have at it.
Thank you very much. And I don't mind saying that this will be an improvised attempt. So we'll see where we go.
As opposed to the other one.
The beautiful orchestration and careful lyrical genius. Okay. There'll be some echoes of the old one because I need to get into the flow. Magpies living in the garden. Black and white. Watch out for magpies. What have you noticed recently about magpies? They're not social distancing. They're travelling in packs. One for sorrow and two for joy. Three for a girl and four for a global conspiracy. Yes, that's right. The magpies had the vaccine. They had the antidote all along. Magpies, they're working with the bats. They work together to destroy humanity. Magpies, magpie facts.
Oh, bravo. Bravo. I have to say, I'm glad I went with your gut feeling on this one. I think everybody listening to this would have been much worse off had they not heard that.
And I think, yeah, collectively, everyone's thinking, you know what? 2020 was a rough year. But if it was worth it to get magpie facts back, so be it.
So be it. Well, I'm looking forward
to... That's not for me to say.
I'm looking forward to the heavy rock guitar version of that jingle, I have to say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we will be back on
Tuesday.
And hopefully the biggest magpie fact will be that we've taken 3 points off Newcastle.
I would love that to be. If there could be enough to talk about in the game that the only magpie facts were football related, we would take that at this point.
For sure. We'll keep fingers crossed for that. So join us on Tuesday. We will have a preview podcast for you over the weekend as well. So if you're a Patreon member, you will get a Newcastle preview podcast. That's patreon.com/arseblog. For now, though, thank you very much indeed for listening. Thanks for being with us, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.